This is Rabbi Shai Held, Parashat B'Midbar 5774, Divine Love and Human Uniqueness. The opening of the book of Numbers does not exactly make for scintillating reading. God commands Moses to take a census of adult males, which Moses proceeds to do. We are then presented with the results in highly repetitious detail. It takes fully 46 verses for the Torah to get to its final tally of 603,550 military-age Israelite men. Why the slow, creeping pace? Why the seemingly plodding procession through tribe after tribe after tribe? A variety of Jewish interpreters suggest that though Numbers 1 may seem boring at first glance, it actually conveys one of the core truths of Jewish theology and ethics. Individuals matter. One of Jewish theology's most fundamental claims is that God loves us. As Rabbi Akiva, one of the greatest of the Talmudic sages, teaches, "Beloved is the human being, for he was created in the image of God. Even more beloved is he, for it was made known to him that he was created in the image of God, as it says, 'For in the image of God, God made the human being.'" God loves us, in other words, not because of anything we do, but simply by dint of who we are, human beings created in God's image. But Judaism goes much further. Jewish sources insist that God cherishes human beings not as faceless representatives of a privileged species, but as individuals. God loves us in all our singularity and uniqueness. A Mishnah teaches, "Adam was created singly to proclaim the greatness of the Blessed Holy One. For a human being stamps many coins with one die, and they are all alike one with the other. But the King of the Kings of Kings, the Blessed Holy One, has stamped all of humanity with the die of the first man, yet not one of them is like his fellow." The Mishnah's message is staggering. Never before in the history of the cosmos has there ever been another human being just like you. And never again in the history of the cosmos will there ever be another human being just like you. And this stunning fact redounds to the glory of God. The Mishnah continues, "Therefore, each and every person is obligated to say, 'For my sake was the world created.'" For a long time, I found this line deeply troubling. Isn't this a prescription for narcissism and self-congratulation? But over time, I realized that my anxiety said more about the culture we live in than about the text itself. We hear about uniqueness and all too often wonder what that entitles us to. But when the Mishnah talks about human uniqueness and its implications for God's glory, it has in mind not, or at least not only, what we are entitled to, but what we are responsible for. We are, all of us, called upon to serve. Yet crucially, we are not asked to serve in nameless anonymity, but rather in the fullness of our own individuality. As human beings faced with a world so utterly broken in so many ways, we are called upon to ask not just what I can give, but also, and crucially, what I can give. How can I, with my unique gifts, talents, passions, and my unique combination of weaknesses and limitations, best serve God? God's love is a call to service, and we answer not as human beings in general, but as human beings in all of our particularity. There is another critical dimension to all this. Our uniqueness implies our irreplaceability. When the Mishnah tells us that there has never been and will never be another person just like us, it also implicitly points to the tragedy of our inevitable death. When we die, something infinitely precious and utterly irreplaceable simply disappears. To put this starkly, Jewish theology affirms that when parents cry over the death of their child and wail that someone singularly precious has been lost, they are giving voice not only to their own personal pain, but also to a fundamental truth about the universe. Uniqueness, and therefore irreplaceability, are constitutive of our humanity. What is true about humanity in general is true of the Jewish people in particular as well. God's covenant people are treasured not as nameless, faceless members of a collective, but as unique individuals living in an intimate relationship with God. As we've already mentioned, the book of Numbers begins rather slowly. In the first chapter, we learn about how, at God's behest, Moses undertakes a census of Israelite males aged 20 and over. In the following chapter, we will hear about the arrangement of the camp, again tribe by tribe, in painstaking detail. Why all this careful accounting? A midrash offers a parable. A man had a stock of fine pearls, which he used to count before taking out, and count again before putting away. So similarly, the midrash imagines God saying to the Israelites, "You are my children, and therefore I count you often." Counting requires taking stock of each individual pearl. Each one is precious, taken out to be numbered and delighted in. In a similar vein, Rabbi Yitzchak Arama asks why all the seemingly dull details of the census are necessary. Did God not know the number of Israelites encamped in the desert in any case? Taking account of them one by one, Arama argues, serves to teach that each one has individual worth and is not just a member of the collective. They were all equal in stature, Arama writes, and yet the stature of each one was different. Along the same lines, modern interpreter Nechama Leibovich asks why Parashat Naso records in great detail the sacrifices which each tribal chieftain brought in turn, especially since they all brought precisely the same offering. Perhaps, she suggests, the Torah wished to emphasize the importance and uniqueness of the individual, repudiating the ideology that regards the human being as a cog in a vast machine and as an indistinguishable member of a mass. Leibovich couches her comments negatively, as a statement of what Judaism rejects, but we can just as easily formulate it positively, as a reflection of what Judaism passionately affirms. Being part of a collective, no matter how important or sacred, should never be allowed, must never be allowed, to obliterate human difference and individuality. Another message may be implicit here as well. Judaism traditionally demands relative uniformity of practice. Recall, the chieftains all bring the very same sacrifices. But such uniformity need not, must not, efface real differences in opinion, experience, and insight, which are to be treasured rather than overcome. Rabbi Isaiah Horowitz, known as the Shla, reports a Kabbalistic teaching that the 600,000 Israelites in the desert correspond to the 600,000 letters in the Torah. The souls of the Israelites originated in the letters of the Torah, he writes, and the spirituality of the Torah consists of those souls. All subsequent generations of Jews, he insists, are branches of those 600,000 original souls. We need not be detained here by an extensive analysis of precisely what Rabbi Horowitz means by his provocative words. Instead, we can derive the following simple but powerful implications. If every Jew is a letter in the Torah, then every Jew has unique Torah to teach, insights into God's teaching that are unavailable to anyone else. Without exposure to Torah, something in the very being of that Jewish person remains tragically dormant and unrealized. And conversely, without the world of Torah being exposed to that person, something crucial in the Torah remains buried, hidden from sight. Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel writes that a Jew without the Torah is obsolete. Maybe so, but it is equally the case that the Torah without any particular Jew is incomplete. The Hasidic master Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev extends Rabbi Horowitz's insights into the realms of education and leadership. He teaches that, quote, "The Jewish people are the 600,000 letters of the Torah. Thus Israel is the Torah, because every single Jew is a letter of the Torah." When Numbers says that Moses recorded Pakad the Israelites in the wilderness of Sinai, Levi Yitzchak creatively takes that to mean that Moses taught, limade them Torah. Moses taught Israel Torah, just as God had taught him. Levi Yitzchak's words are less than transparent, but I think what he means to suggest is that Moses' teaching depends on his seeing the Israelites in all their uniqueness, understanding their own unique perspectives on and contributions to Torah. It takes a great teacher of Torah to understand how the individual pieces fit together to make a whole, how the disparate letters can be woven together to form a Torah. A real teacher works with her student's individuality in two ways. She teaches in a way that the student can hear and learn, and she elicits from him his own unique insights and inspiration. Moses, known universally in post-biblical Jewish sources as Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses our teacher, is here held up as the paradigmatic educator, one who sees, cherishes, and draws out the singular capacities and contributions of each student. In serving God, we strive to cherish human uniqueness just as God does. This has dramatic implications for education, as we've seen, but also for what it means to live in community. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik writes that, quote, "The individuals belonging to the community complement one another existentially. Each individual possesses something unique, rare, which is unknown to others. Each individual has a unique message to contribute, a special color to add to the communal spectrum. When a person joins the community, therefore, he contributes something which no one else could have contributed. He enriches the community existentially. He is irreplaceable." Indeed, Soloveitchik adds, to recognize a person means to affirm that he is irreplaceable. To hurt a person, in contrast, means to tell him that he is expendable, that there is no need for him. I would suggest that a Jewish community worthy of the name is thus charged to honor two facts simultaneously. As Jews and as human beings, we share deep connection and kinship, and at the same time, we are irreducibly different from one another. To live together is to nurture what connects us, even as we affirm and celebrate what renders us unique. In building a community, then, we have an opportunity to emulate God. Just as God treasures each Jew and each human being in all her singularity, so too must we. Shabbat Shalom.